This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast and this special conversation with Telegraph writer Jim White. Jim will no doubt be familiar to a lot of you, a football columnist with the Telegraph, obviously, a regular contributor to the United We Stand podcast, and also, I think, on an impressive run of winning form on Five Live's weekly show, Fighting Talk. Hello to Jim White. Jim, how are you?
Rich, I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah, very good. I lost the last time I was on Fighting Talk, but, you know, thanks was for it? Bringing it up. Yeah.
Well, I listened to it in the car when I drive back and forth, and I thought you'd won it, but
no,
maybe I'm wrong.
I lost the, whatever it's called.
Oh, it was the head at the end. Yeah, it was the Valentine's card thing, wasn't it? Yeah.
I was doomed.
Heartily recommend Fighting Talk for anyone who's not listened to that. Colin Murray hosts that along with a few others. Colin Murray, excellent EFL coverage. So even more kind of...
Interesting, as we are doing, it's all at the moment obliged to be done remotely. And it's a really difficult thing to pull that together, but with four big egos all shouting at each other, but they managed to do it somehow.
Does someone have a mute button? I'd hope so.
I may well be talking away and not actually any words being broadcast.
The phrase "you're on mute, Jim" is not been said too much to you, hopefully. Let me put this up on the screen for those of you who are watching us on the YouTube. Jim wrote this article last week, capturing that certainly the growing mood around Ipswich, certainly starting with the Blue Action protests and then bits and pieces in the media since. And Saturday, I think, am I right in thinking you've got a soft spot for our opponents from the last weekend, Oxford? Is that right? Are they your League One team, Jim? Am I right?
I live in Oxford, so okay. I've followed them. Both my sons are Oxford fans. And I follow them from a distance, yeah.
And as we briefly discussed last week, kind of an example of a club that in League One that's being run very well and exploiting all of its assets and selling players at the right time as well. So we could talk about that. But I think what I was after, and apologies for dragging you back from, was it Chelsea, Southampton you were covering this week?
That's right, I was.
So back to League One with you with Ipswich. It's just to understand the wider perspective, really. The article, I think, certainly chimed with most Ipswich fans at the moment. And I think I'm fascinated by the fact that we're kind of a tier three club and national journalists are now looking into what's going on there. The title was How Ipswich Lurched Into Crisis, kind of a hapless manager, a silent owner sending the club into freefall. What was the motivation for looking back into Ipswich Town after we did something in the playoffs, didn't you, 14-15? But yeah, what encouraged you to have a look at what's going on in Suffolk?
I think it was that statistic about the lowest league position in 64 years. And digging into it, the last time Ipswich were that low, they were actually on the way up. You know, this was having arrived in the league from from non-league and were beginning to progress. And then, of course, we, those of us who watch from a distance, associate Ipswich with, punching above their weight. That's where they've got, but also with a kind of progressive football. So it was the learning curve for Sir Ralph Ramsey, for Bobby Robson. Both went on to be England managers, having succeeded in Ipswich. And this kind of sense of stagnation and having sunk to there, because, you know, they're not actually in the relegation positions. And it's an interesting one from an outside perspective. And I'm sorry, Ipswich fans, to suggest that you're some sort of odd, example of something that we should all look at. But what's interesting about it is that it isn't the typical story. So it's not Wigan Athletic. It's not Luton Town. It's not clubs that have suddenly sunk because of preposterous. It's not Bolton Wanderers, clubs that have sunk because of preposterous owners coming in and stripping them naked. This is an owner who's been around for a long time, but it all seems to have it's a perfect storm of poor decisions all coming together, accumulating and creating this position. And that's quite unusual in football, Rich. I mean, most times, there's, a leech at the top who's drawing money out. The Bolton Wanderers situation was absolutely disgraceful 5 years ago. And Ipswich isn't like that. And my colleague Nick Ames, who works for The Guardian and has covered this a lot, I think he used the term sleepwalking. Mm. And I think that's the interesting aspect of it, isn't it? That this is a club for you, absolutely critical part of your life, but for the outsider, it's an odd example. It's an unusual example.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason, behind the question is a lot of Ipswich fans. Our podcast is inundated with questions week after week about, how does it get much worse? Well, sadly, there's a whole tier below us, and we're not there yet. We're comfortably in mid-table, but you've kind of put something down there about the owner is not a malicious, just incompetent. And I just wonder, Nick's article was pretty, pretty detailed about the failings, the historical failings, and that kind of stuff. I just find it fascinating that you'd be interested in covering it because it just it's serial incompetence rather than someone out to maybe destroy the club from the inside. Or maybe he is, and he's just doing it very stealthily. It's
well, the conspiracy theorists love, of course, the fact that Lambert was at Norwich City. I think Norwich fans are particularly enjoying that. Yes. The idea that he's some sort of sleeper.
Agent Lambert, yes.
Yeah. I do think what has precipitated it, although you will tell me that this has been going on much longer than that, but I think what has added to it is the fact that the lockdown is an absolute disaster for the bigger club in League One. I think talk to a Sunderland fan, and I know they've been recently taken over, but Sunderland without fans, you need fans in the stadium at this level. You're not getting the television income. You're not getting that. You need fans. You need local business support. All that has been stripped away. You add to that the fact that Marcus Evans's business is also critical on attendance. It's business conferencing, it's corporate hospitality at sporting events, it's organizing big events, which have all stopped. So everything has been stripped away from Ipswich Town. Evans has no income coming into his company, no income coming in from Ipswich Town. He was always, after initially being a generous benefactor, he's latterly realized that is not going to work for him, and he's become parsimonious to the point of it being dangerous. And I think that in a sense he's been put into that position. Maybe I'm being too kind to him, you would tell me, but I think he's been accelerated into that position by the pandemic. And yeah, that makes I said that Ipswich are outliers. I mean, in a sense they're suffering in the same way that a lot of clubs in League One are suffering. I mean, it is an absolute nightmare. Looking at the roadmap out of it, doesn't seem to be any mention of fans this season, I think.
No.
That's going to make it even worse.
And we had it, you know, we talked about this last week, that, you know, that the mood around the manager, which we need to talk about in a minute as well. If supporters are in the ground, A, that's good for income, but B, that's a louder, more compelling reason to remove the manager who is not justifying his, I think he's amongst the highest earners, if not the highest earner managerially in League One as well. And that's another variable here, he's been on kind of a PR campaign this week, as you would expect a manager who knows about how to put his external image out there. But Paul Lambert's an interesting extra dimension to this as well. You mentioned the Norwich angle. Actually, largely, I think, has been forgotten about, maybe out of convenience or not wanting to think about it. But Paul Lambert's adding into this mix as well, isn't he?
Very interesting, Paul Lambert, because Norwich, tremendous success. He got promoted out of League One and then out of the Championship into the Premier League. Obviously, a very ambitious man, got Aston Villa. And then things went horribly wrong. And at Aston Villa, he looked a man adrift. I don't know if you recall, but on the touchline, he put on an awful lot of weight. He looked very pasty-faced. He looked a man really suffering and was sacked before they were relegated. And subsequently to that, he has become a kind of inverse Sam Allardyce. You bring him in and he gets you relegated. Stoke City, they were relegated. Not his fault necessarily. Comes into Ipswich. First thing he does is get them relegated. I've done a little bit of research into this, and how can a man who was so successful at Norwich City decline so precipitately? And I think one of the reasons is Ian Culverhouse, who was his number two at Norwich, clearly was more important to him than he realised, and they parted their ways midway through his time at Aston Villa, and it's been a downhill slide ever since. I have met him, actually. Curiously, I met him in a radio studio soon after, the summer after he was fired at Aston Villa. And I was waiting in reception and I didn't recognize him because I'd seen this, as I said, bloated, pale character, not waving but drowning on the touchline at Villa. And there was this very slim, bronzed, clearly very fit man alongside me, and I didn't initially recognize him. He was very charming. He's very good at putting at communicating himself, which is a real oddity. If you're that good on a radio panel, if you're that good at delivering what you feel when you're doing the media, why can't you do it in a dressing room? Because clearly there are issues at Ipswich Town with the dressing room. And is it because he's a Champions League winner himself? He can't cope with players who aren't good enough?
He's not told us about that, by the way, Jim.
Rarely. it's a really interesting decline. But going back to what you were saying, I think it wouldn't have been so much the noise in the stadium that would have led to him being fired already if we weren't under pandemic. I think it would have been people voting with their feet. You know, I think that, you know, endless nil-nil draws, an absolute inability to put the ball in the net, a kind of stagnant, stale football. Look, he's got the best squad in League One, the highest paid squad in League One. What's he got, 48 pro players or whatever?
Something like that,
and yet he can't find any of them to put the ball in the net. And I think that, look, you've got a brilliant, loyal, hardcore season ticket holders. But this is a club that you're in a 30,000-seat stadium, a club that would have a lot of floating voters. And if you're doing well, they'll be coming back. You know, if you go on the march and get a manager who can get you promoted out of League One, there'll be big crowds coming back.
Yeah.
Well, under Paul Lambert, there wouldn't have been. It would have been down to that hardcore committed fan, and I think that financial hit would have seen him off.
Yeah,
3 months ago, frankly.
And if kind of the situation at the club wasn't bad enough, and you've just mentioned it there, there's this news about John Nolan, a midfielder, and Caden Jackson, who's a forward and probably would have made an impact off the bench on Saturday had he been selected, banished to this bomb squad in the under 23s. You spoke to Darren Bent, who was part of the same treatment at Villa. It's interesting. Stephen Warnock, I think, on Football Focus a few weeks back said exactly the same thing. It's a strange trait for a manager to have, particularly one, you know, we joke about it, you know, who's played in big dressing rooms and at big clubs, that good managers don't do that kind of stuff. Or the dirty laundry is certainly isn't aired in public, is it?
No, it's kept very, very quiet. And then, you know, after the nil-nil draw against Northampton Town, you know, there was this kind of paranoid, self-defensive, passionate interview with the East Anglian Times, where Daily Times, where he was basically pointing the finger at other people. It was, now it's to do with me, mate. Nobody could sort this out. It's not my fault. Nothing to do with me. Not mea culpa. You know, so what is it? What is it about? What is going on? Are you unable to get who you want? Well, you've been there 2.5 years. If it's to do with structure, you should by now have sorted it out.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I've heard, and you can correct me on this if I'm wrong on this, one of the things I've heard, and unfortunately, you know, the lawyers at the Telegraph are very keen to ensure that you don't say anything too libelous. But one of the things I've heard, so it didn't get in the article, but one of the things I've heard is that Marcus Evans is very keen to take control. He's not a good delegator. But the problem is he doesn't make decisions. So there's a kind of lot of smaller decisions which aren't made. So
yeah,
it's almost as if you've got someone in charge who wants other people to do the day-to-day running, but insists on doing it himself and then doesn't do it. And I think that makes a kind of drift behind the scenes, which is clearly evidenced in the dressing room and on the pitch.
And it pervades everywhere as well, even off the field in terms of communications and retail. That's what, you know, there was a lot of chat in the summer and about Evans wanting to stamp his own philosophy or his, you know, there's these fabled 5-point plan that ultimately is in the owner's kit book 101, isn't it? Come up with a strategy plan. You know, the difference with Evans, unlike someone like David Sheepshanks, who had a 3-year plan to get us promoted in the late 90s, which obviously culminated. It was a 5-year plan that was done in 3. Great when that happens. Marcus Evans' plans are kind of fag packet kind of and not really followed through, and we get kind of slopey shoulders when things don't happen. And I don't know whether the change of approach over the summer to kind of be more on Paul Lambert's back to kind of impress on him the need to do passing football, which at the moment is at the expense of attacking football and scoring goals, it seems. Whether that's an owner trying to get things back on track, trying to make a fist of things, but clearly being out of their depth in doing so. And to be fair to Paul Lambert, this hierarchy thing, is it as important, I guess, as Paul Lambert? Maybe all of us think at League One level, at least. You know, we mentioned Oxford. I'm not sure there's a big hierarchy there. Carl Robinson seems to me is the focal point and sets the tone. Is that how it should be done?
Yes, I think it is how it should be done at a lower league club. You know, you haven't got room for that huge hierarchy. You just can't. You can't do it. I mean, what you were saying as well when we spoke ahead of doing that article was that parsimony is evidenced in things like the pitch.
Yeah,
Ipswich Town's pitch used to be magnificent, didn't it? And it's now threadbare. And that's through kind of self-destructive parsimony. You know, if you don't invest in the pitch, you can't play passing football. It's you know, then it becomes a problem. Now, interestingly, there was a lot of reaction to that piece on Twitter. And one of the things that I got people mentioning was that I was wrong to say that the academy was not producing as it was. I'm not quite sure about that, Rich. I mean, you will correct me if I've got this wrong, but am I not right in saying that last October was the first time in about 30 years that there wasn't a single Ipswich player in any of the England age group teams? So you've got a situation where there's nobody from under 13 or whatever it is, all the way up to the under 21s. And Ipswich always had somebody there. always. So there's nobody there. So that means what you've not got is, for some reason now, whether that's, again, going back to parsimony, maybe the scouting system's been starved of funds, whatever it is, what you're not getting is the people coming up who you can then polish up and sell on. And Ipswich was always very good at doing that and making a bit of money along the way. Tyrone Mings, I know he didn't come through the academy, but he was one of those sort of forgotten gems that they brought in, made better, sold on, and made money. Now, that is, as a business model, a really good one for League One clubs. You know, you get somebody who's been rejected by Chelsea's academy and you turn them into somebody who then gets back into the Championship or the Premier League and you get good money for it. A lot of clubs run like that, Brentford being the prime example of a club that's thrived under it. So Ipswich have shot themselves in the foot even in that. You know, you can't become one of those get them in, make them better, sell them on League One clubs. You can't do that at Ipswich because everything's being kind of starved of funds.
I
just think that that's really indicative of what's going on behind the scenes.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
In terms of the hierarchy, that's where you need stronger people. And you know, I think Steve McGavin was our head of recruitment at academy, quite highly thought of in the era, was poached by Norwich, who have a Category 1 academy. I think the EPPP, I think it is, we've lost a few prospects who are 14, 15, 16 to Premier League clubs. That's a natural consequence, particularly of shifting down the pyramid of where we are. But I think you've probably got, whether Ipswich fans want to believe it or not, or the sign of a successful academy for me is transfers. It's players going out the door. The only player who's been linked with significant moves elsewhere is Flynn Downes, our midfielder, who's linked with a move to Palace. And when we were trying to hold out for a, you know, £4-5 million fee, the kind of the fee that maybe Leeds spent on Fabian Delph. And that's just not realistic. And you think of the other academy players that are coming through at the moment and playing in the first team, of which there were 4, I think, on against Northampton, maybe a few more on, well, I'm trying to think, didn't do the numbers for Saturday, but who else wants these players? You know, these are players of academy players of convenience for us, which is good. And it's great to see particularly local players coming through, but who would sign and Miles Kinnock, who's our left back, probably a name. These are names that you probably not heard of either. That's an illustration as well. Whereas rewind 10, 15 years, you know, the academy was producing players like Connor Wickham, and before that, Darren Ambrose, Darren Bent, That conveyor belt has stopped, and for whatever reason, I don't know what that is. You've got to say the owner's part of that as well.
But the manager also. I mean, if you what you need is a proper pathway. And if the manager's playing five low knees, he's suggesting, and he might be right. I mean, he's suggesting kids from elsewhere are better than kids I've got.
And it's not really proven to be the case so far. You know, I think that we've got Troy Parrott, who from Spurs, Luke Matheson from Wolves, who probably are an improvement in the areas where they play. But other than that, I'm not sure they've made a drastic difference. And as you said, we've got a young defender called Corey Ndarbe, who's on loan at Ayr United, who could quite conceivably be playing at centre-back for us, rather than, with no disrespect to him, Mark McGuinness, who's learning the game with us from Arsenal. Where I think he's the under-23's captain. And this is a pattern that's repeating, and the owners and our director of footballing operations said we would never do. And again, when a team is scrabbling around for form and where there is no structure and coherent leadership, these kind of short-termist decisions start to creep in, don't they?
And so what's going to happen, Rich? Where do you
I was going to ask you that.
I have heard that there is a serious bid, and that Evans is in discussions, serious bid involving senior figures elsewhere, executive figures coming in on the back of money from overseas, but we're not talking an oligarch looking to splash his cash. These are people who are looking to make money out of the club, but what they would do in terms of making money is ensure that the club progressed and went upwards, which seems to be the only way you are going to make
money. Yeah, which is a weird thing when you think about Marcus Evans and all the money that he sunk, is that he's forgotten that being in League One is not how you get return on your investment. It's bizarre how decisions such as, and you asked me the question last week, and I'm going to flip it around on you and put you on the spot. What would you do next? Is why would you keep hold of a manager who clearly hasn't found a formula to get you the business end of the league table? That to me is, if you're an owner looking to make an impact, yes, there's a cost, a significant cost to sack Paul Lambert, but surely you would do that. And to not do that is almost inflicting harm upon yourself, isn't it? So would you sack?
Absolutely no question the manager's time is over. You know, so... sometimes you stick with managers and sometimes you don't. And this is a case where everything has gone wrong. The idea that this is a manager who is going to propel you up the table has gone. I mean, his body language is all wrong. His tactics are all wrong. And his relationship with the fans is all wrong. You know, as that banner said, thanks for the beers, but time has been called at the bar. It's got to go. And the club needs to bring in somebody who buys to the idea of progress. And I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect the new ownership, it'll be bye-bye Paul Lambert immediately. I suspect they'll probably come in with their own man, whoever that might be. I don't know. I think his time is definitely limited. Going back to the owner, what I think you're absolutely right on that is I think he's got financial problems way beyond Ipswich Town. And the problem he has is that he's concentrating on those, and yet he doesn't allow other people to run Ipswich Town. So, you know, he said, right, the money ends here. There's not going to be an investment. But I'm not going to control it. You have to go back to, you know, the money he put in has always gone on debt. He's just added to the debt. Yes, he paid off the debt when he bought the club in 2007. He paid off the debt, but he paid it off in a way that he was just transferring it onto his own company. And my understanding is it's no fault of his own. The pandemic has absolutely exacerbated that. So you're talking about, you know, close to 100 million debt that he owns and that the club owes him.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that's why he's looking to get out.
longer term, you know, that's the kind of, to me, you know, I can sit and moan about the on-field stuff all the time, but for me and a lot of Ipswich fans, arguably a minority who are interested in what's going on off the field as well as on it, it just feels like a ticking time bomb to me, because there is a point where Marcus Evans, I've tried all of these things and nothing is working, so I want an exit strategy. The takeover, you know, the rumours, as you've mentioned, have started to build over the weekend, and let's keep an eye on that. But ultimately, that might be months away. That might not be something that happens imminently. So you still got, you know, a good almost a half of the campaign left. But to me, I just feel that Marcus Evans, if that takeover thing falls through, if it's there at all, if his route out is to sell the training ground, if it's to cash in on stuff, and you know, I think to your original article and Nick's thing is, we're sleepwalking maybe into oblivion, but potentially we are assuming that Marcus Evans doesn't suddenly go, right, I'm washing my hands of this and I'm going to try and claw back as much of this debt as I can, and in doing so, we'll take the club down with him. Is that something that you think is a legitimate fear?
I think that's absolutely a legitimate fear. He has not made Ipswich a particularly saleable prospect. No, heavily indebted, not doing very well. There's a great history there, but how many people buy on history? They buy on the present. And so he's in negotiations, we understand, with a potential buyer. But as you say, what if that falls over? I can't see there's a line round the street outside Portman Road of people going, oh, just sign. Yeah, I'll just sign here.
Just yeah, here's a check for 30 really quid or whatever you want, Marcus. Yeah, name your price. Yeah, exactly right. And so I think the kind of the last question that I'll pitch to you is, if you're Marcus Evans at the moment, and you know, let's put this takeover to one side at the moment. Presumably, the biggest thing, the most impactful thing you can do, is a change of the manager, isn't it?
It is indeed. I mean, he has to change his whole philosophy, I think, in terms of the way he runs the club. But the first thing he has to do is change the manager. It's just not working. And there are good people out there. You know, there are good people who would come in and just supply some energy.
Yes.
I know that sounds an odd word, but he feels to me, Paul Lambert, like an energy drain. You know, that kind of, as you use the metaphor of the shoulders sinking. His shoulders are permanently sunk, and you can imagine it's not fun. I would imagine being at the training ground. It's not a laugh. You're not having a good time. What you want is someone to come in, bang it all together, get them verved up. And you know, you mentioned to me the Cowley brothers. It didn't work out at Huddersfield, but they are people who would do that, and they're people with ambition and energy. I mean, the person who Ipswich ought to bite the hand, you know, fight for like crazy, but I can't see him moving at the moment, is Michael Appleton at Lincoln City. But
yeah,
I can't see
that,
him moving
yeah.
at the moment, because I think he's getting things as he wants them.
Would you see it? This is the interesting debate, and again, why your kind of more neutral perspective is interesting. And Nick's article back in the last year said this, that Ipswich fans are really good at underselling the club, and you know, that you talked about the history, and I agree that, you know, the Robson era and even the Burley era, and maybe even to a lesser extent the Joe Royle era, ages ago, and there are people now who are starting to watch Ipswich who've never seen this success. Would someone like Michael Appleton, who's got Lincoln to the top of League One and an Ipswich Town, or maybe even, let's say, a Sunderland came knocking, would he see Ipswich as a step down at the moment, would you say, from where he is?
I mean, he's had an interesting managerial career, in that he had his fingers very badly burnt when his ambition took him to Blackburn and Portsmouth, two clubs with magnificent tradition as well, and appalling ownership. I think he now very carefully studies the owner. So I'm not sure whether...
In which case
he would... you know, I think he's got a good... He had a he had a very good relationship with the previous owner at Oxford United. He has a very good relationship with the current owner at Lincoln City. I think that's what he goes for now rather than prestige. I think earlier in his career, he was definitely someone who thought, oh, I'm manager of Blackburn Rovers. I'm manager of Portsmouth. This is big time. Now I think he's much more. I think he's had his fingers burnt by those experiences. So yeah, I'm sorry, Rich, probably not. No.
Probably not. That's what I assumed anyway. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there are people out there. And I mean, whatever happens next, I mean, there is just so much stuff happening. Maybe as you said, it's the pandemic. Maybe we're just starved of, I've kind of run out of box sets on Netflix and Amazon Prime. So maybe it's just fabricating some pantomime around Ipswich, which is all that I've got at the moment. But given you're interested, given the Times are interested, TalkSport are interested about us, it's sad that we're being talked about in this kind of context rather than being upwardly mobile. But is this a situation that you're going to keep an eye on? Is there a sequel or a kind of a trilogy of Ipswich Tide articles to come in the next few months, do you think, from you? Or is this...
Definitely, I think it is. I think they are indicative. I think they're an example of, you know, as I said, the perfect storm of accumulated issues. And I feel for you being in the middle of it because you feel so powerless, and particularly at the moment where you can't even go and moan in the stadium. The fans are the club, and you know, they are being absolutely beasted over this. And you know, power play between an egotistical manager and a parsimonious owner, it's always the fans who suffer in the middle.
Yeah, if I mean, there's a point to end on, I think, wholeheartedly agree. And I guess on behalf of Ipswich fans, any exposure, any shedding of light that extends beyond Suffolk is really appreciated and really thorough, well considered article. So on behalf of Ipswich fans, thanks, Jim, and keep an eye on us as well. Let's not assume that anything might improve rapidly, but a takeover might change things. And
the takeover might. I'm fingers crossed on that, Rich, because it is a club that should be there. Should be championship minimum.
Yeah. Well, fingers crossed for the future. Jim, where can we, is there anything else that you want to draw attention to, your Twitter handle or anything like that?
I am on Twitter. It's jim.white1. Anything that you, any underhand or criticism,
keep it
the
nice.
Other guy.
Yeah, the other one. He didn't do so well last week. Yeah, at JimW1 on Twitter. Thank you again for your time. Really appreciate that, Jim. And look after yourself.
Thanks, Rich, and you.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.